25 years ago, this country was caught up in something it had not been involved in before. 52 of our fellow citizens were being held hostage by the nation of Iran, which that year had been taken over by the Muslim fundamentalists led by Ayatollah Khomeini. Now here in 2004, 25 years later, we're very familiar with Islamic fundamentalists and terrorism and hostage taking and all the rest. But in 1979, it was something that we weren't all that familiar with. I don't think we learned our lesson from that 444 days that our fellow citizens were being held hostage. Let me ask one of the people who was actually there what he thinks about that. Rocky Sickman, who at the time was a 22-year-old United States Marine Guard from Krakow, Missouri, and who for the last nearly quarter century after getting back from Iran has lived here in South County, St. Louis. He's got a lovely wife, Jill. He's got three kids. He's got a career. But he's also got this moment in history that is forever etched in the American brain and certainly in his as well. Rocky, thanks for coming on the show today.
Paul, thank you for having me, sir.
It's my pleasure. Do you think we missed a lesson?
Paul, I can tell you that young Marine back in November 4th of 1979, the morning that they eventually broke through the embassy basement windows, coming face to face with the Iranians with an assault off shotgun, along with my fellow Marine Billy Gallegos standing next to me with our gas mask, Dawn, holding that shotgun. That is a thought that comes to mind, it has came to mind for the past 25 years. Should we have shot those individuals coming through that basement window? And again, being a fellow military man, our orders that morning were to do not antagonize, don't fire your weapon. Obviously, we threw tear gas and we got to another location where we secured ourselves until we were then told to eventually give ourselves up. But I always wonder, Paul, what would have happened that morning had we fired our weapons.
Now, you say your orders were don't antagonize. That's an interesting choice of words because it would seem that it was past antagonizing. They were already attacking.
That is definitely correct. In fact, they had taken people, Paul, that you had just had breakfast with that morning, bringing them to the front of the embassy, demanding entrance into the embassy by putting a gun and a knife to their head. About that time, obviously, it was very difficult, Paul, as you could just imagine seeing your fellow comrades on the other side of that wall, that door that you wanted to open so much, but you couldn't. And then, of course, through the basement came the unexpected, where they tied wrapped a chain around a bumper and around the other end of the bars, which, again, the American government learned from 1979 how to make and build a better embassy. But I truly think that we might have missed the opportunity to possibly make a change in terrorism back 25 years ago.
So you do think we missed a lesson there, not just a lesson to hold your fire when they're attacking the embassy, but perhaps something even greater?
Absolutely. As you sit here and you look at everything that's taken place from that day of 1979, Paul, to the day that we were released. I mean, after being, released, that is, from the back of that wall and our freedom was taken, and you don't really know how wonderful freedom is until it's been removed from you. And for 444 days, from the mock firing squads to the Russian roulette to the imprisonment in your room for, 400 and some days, allowed to go out seven times out of the whole 400 days, and then, of course, to come to a day of ransom where they demanded $24 billion to release us by gunpoint or else we're going to kill you, that's what our government had to face at that time. And, I'm very excited, obviously, to be here, but we paid a ransom, and they turned around, Paul, and immediately following the Iran hostage crisis, was the arms for hostages, the Iranian crisis with President Reagan.
Iran-Contra.
Thank you very much. And after that, of course, was Lieutenant Colonel Higgins, a peacekeeping mission, then to other embassies around the world, to Terry Anderson, Father Jinkel, to most recently the fingerprints of Iran in Saudi Arabia at the Air Force base. So it was like that was a day that we gave them to a right to go ahead and to say, you know, if you take people, there is a chance that we could pay you back if you give them back.
Yeah. $8 billion in Iranian funds were unfrozen, that had been frozen here by the administration, the Carter administration. They were unfrozen to earn the release of you and your 51 fellow hostages. Now, when you signed on with the Marine Corps, you know that, you know, joining the military is something where you could end up giving your life for your country. Are you saying now that you think that the country should not have unfrozen that, and that knowing that, you might have ended up dead?
Well, and again, as I have the opportunity of looking back, that's something, Paul, that I'm very happy to be here. But as I said earlier, I always think back what would have happened had we fired upon them. We didn't, but we turned around. And as an American mission, an embassy, they are protected no matter what country. That country is supposed to protect them. The day of November 4th, that they, the country of Iran, allowed hostages to be taken at that embassy, it was an international crime. And it was something that we should have never paid the ransom. And again, there were so many days, Paul, you have to imagine the first 30 days that we were taken, we were tied to a chair from morning till night. And there was every morning you wake up, you were hoping that the bomb would be dropped on that country. And we paid them that ransom. And since then, it's like been giving them an opportunity to continue on. And you know what, Paul? That was a day that was probably the most difficult day in my life, those next 444 days. But the most difficult thing to understand was most recently when we sued Iran.
Yes, the hostages, Rocky and his 51 fellow hostages, or those who were still alive and the estates of the others, sued Iran in 2000 and actually got a federal judge to kind of lean your way in 2001. And then, correct me if I'm wrong here, Rocky, but the United States government stepped in and said, you can't do that. You can't get any money out of them because we'd be going back on our deal. Is that right?
That is absolutely correct. The day after about a year, again, this is a lawsuit. And being a basic layman as myself and everybody else in your audience, you know, when you go to court, you sue a specific individual. Well, we had sent Iran, the foreign ministry, the government, this lawsuit and waited for their response. Of course, no response was ever sent back to us. The day that we were to have had our judgment, in the back of the courtroom, if you could just imagine the courtroom with two tables, left and right, in the front, and the hostages in the back, and the door opens up and two distinguished gentlemen come walking through the courtroom and go and sit to the left-hand side of the courtroom where the Iranian government was supposed to be. And all of a sudden, the judge appears, and the judge had stated that there are two visitors with us today. Please come and represent yourself. And it was at that point that they had asked the judge to please vacate this case. And again, that was the most difficult time, was to swallow, to see our own government come with the taxpayers' dollars being paid to help support a terrorist-dealing country like Iran that was supposed to be the axis of evil, which would have been a perfect opportunity to show a country, as Iran did 25 years ago, that and thereafter, everything that they've been involved with, that you cannot sponsor terrorism. And how would you feel, Paul, if you were one of those hostages and you saw that take place?
Well, I'd be mad for two reasons. One, because of what those guys did that day. But two, that nobody had mentioned to me ahead of time that going forward with this lawsuit wasn't going to go anywhere. I mean, when you guys started the lawsuit in 99 or 2000, whenever it was, you and your lawyers all got together and decided to go forward with this lawsuit, you were told, we are going to be able to win this, and we are able to we're going to be able to get some money out of this, right?
In fact, the American government in 1996 put together a law to basically, if you can identify the country of the axis of evil or the terrorist country that took you, you can sue that country. Which, again, it was the time that we could then show Iran that what you did to us, those 444 days of the mock firing squads to the Russian roulette, to the freedom that they removed from us, and not only the freedom, but, you know, the individuals' lives. We lost 8 Americans in the desert from that rescue operation. That American embassy to this day, Paul, is used as an amusement park to demonstrate and show the young Iranians. This is what the great Satan tried to do to us in 1979, but we fought back. I mean, we lost 8 individuals, and yesterday being Veterans Day was a very important day, obviously, because if you were I and you're sitting in that foreign country and then not knowing until 444 days that 8 people lost their life because of you, they tried to come over and they gave the ultimate sacrifice. I mean, that was Veterans Day to me is and will always be for myself and my family just an incredible day to remember back.
When you were being held hostage for those 444 days, how aware were you of the outside world? Did you know, for instance, that in April 1980 there had been this failed rescue mission? Did you know about the yellow ribbons on the trees or anything that was going on outside the compound?
Well, Paul, being from a small community of Crockett, Missouri, I mean, a wonderful time that, you know, when you're tied to a chair for 30 days, the only thing that you could do, and you could not speak for those 30 days, was to sit there and just, you know, think back of your growing up in the small town of Crockett in Washington, Missouri, and just remember everything that you could think of. And then eventually, it wasn't until like Christmas of 1979 that we started to get mail, letters that, you know, people were, you know, sending, they were praying for you and this and that. And you always thought, you know, as you sat tied to a chair, you thought, you know, there were 52 Americans killed the first minute of the Vietnam War. Who remembers those people? And you're sitting there thinking, people are going to forget about us because there's millions of people in the U.S. and around the world. You know, who's going to remember us? But little did we know. There were notes that were coming over. People were stating that they were praying, but we had no idea. Ted Koppel was formed.
Yes.
Remember that?
Yeah, the Nightline show was at the time called America Held Hostage and was hosted by Frank Reynolds. But then as your crisis and America's crisis went on, it became the show called Nightline with Ted Koppel as the anchor.
Right.
But when you're sitting there tied to that chair and all you have is your memories and your immediate surroundings, you didn't know what was going on with the rescue mission or the ribbons or anything. But I'm amazed that they allowed your mail in. The Iranians, somehow the mail got to them and they allowed it to be delivered to you.
Oh, yes. The mail was all censored. I mean, you didn't. There were so many letters that were supposedly sent. And I can tell you this, it was January 19th of 1981. We were taken to another room and examined by doctors. As they closed the door, you could see across the hallway to another room that just seemed like there were boxes and envelopes stacked to the ceiling of things that people had sent. Whenever you did get something, Paul, the letter, if it was letter 1 of 6, you would get page 4, which obviously meant that they had taken 1, 2, 3, 5, and 6. Mm. They just gave you 4. And or if they really wanted to mess with your mind, because you're in that room, and whenever you heard, which, again, it's interesting, as I sit here and watch the news to this day, Paul, I hear death to America. If you were to go back to Iran, you would still hear death to America to this day. But every time you would hear that death to America, but they would play with your mind by giving you a letter that would in that paragraph, maybe it's two paragraphs, one would be a paragraph that was blackened out and the other would be information on what was happening. Well, you as a hostage sat there and tried to just rub through that black to find out what was underneath there because it meant something. It wasn't until April 25th of 1980 did we realize that something was happening, and that was the night that they came into our room, blindfolded us, and whenever you left your room for going to the restroom, you had to knock on a door, and of course, if you knock too loud, they tell you you have to wait, and you know, at times you just can't wait until you get a good guard to come and take you to the restroom. They tell you to wait. You'd have to have a can in the room to basically use as your restroom. Mm. Well, that night they took us to the restroom, came back, gave us a bag to put our small items, that maybe letters that we had gotten from our family, and then they blindfolded us and handcuffed us. I was handcuffed to Jerry, and my other hand was handcuffed to Billy, which we were in a room together. And so they took us down, and our shoes had been removed at this point in time, and we were given plastic sandals. And they took us down to the vehicle in the back of the embassy. And you could just remember, you know, when you're taken hostage, your sight of hearing is really your savior. That's the only thing that you can rely on. Things were just really hectic. Put us into the van. They handcuffed Jerry to the right-hand side of the van, Billy to the left-hand side of the van, and then all of a sudden, from the front of the Suburban that we were in, you could tell it was our own Suburban, they took a picture, which was a flash, and you're blindfolded, you could see that flash, which is kind of startling, and you didn't know what the heck was going on, and all of a sudden they put a blanket over our head, and they drove us from 10 o'clock that night till 9 o'clock the next morning.
Just drove you around?
No, they drove us to another location because they had just found out that there was a rescue operation. Mm. And what they were doing is moving all the hostages around the country of Iran. Mm. But we had no idea. It wasn't until like a month later, one of the guards, all the guards' names were Ali. So we gave all the guards their own specific name. And Santa Claus, we gave him Santa Claus because he was the first person that came in with mail slung around his back one day and dropped some letters in our room. He had came in as we were locked into a room again. He came into the room, had a Time magazine, and opened this Time magazine, and there were, you know, six eyes, Jerry's, Bill's, and mine, looking at the centerfold of this Time magazine, and he said, "This is what your country is trying to do to you." And then he closed it, and then he walked out. So, I mean, we had no idea what the article said or what it meant. We sat down, as any hostage would, and said, "Okay, what did you see? What did you see? Did you pick up anything?" And we had no idea that there had been a rescue operation, but we saw other pictures of other hostages that we thought maybe had made it out and that there had been a rescue operation, and you were still in the country. So devastating. And it wasn't until, September of 1979, some of the people that we had thought had gotten out, we were in prison. They put us in a government-owned prison in Tehran and kept us there from September through December. And we communicated through the walls and found out that the hostages that we had thought had left were still amongst the ones still with us.
Before this whole thing happened, Rocky, here you are, a Marine guard. You're 22 years old. You've got this assignment. Did you consider it a good assignment when you went there? I know as a Marine you go where you're told, but you could also say to yourself, "Oh, man." Or did you say, "Oh, good"?
Well, no. In fact, Paul, Iran was known as one of the paradises in the Middle East. But, of course, at that time, there was a lot of hatred towards America because, you know, the Shah had just fled for his life. And when I got there in October of 1979, it was rumored that the Shah was going to be entering the U.S., for medical treatment. And so that basically caused the Iranians to take action on taking us to get the Shah of Iran back.
You think we should have given him back?
No. I mean, it's one of those things, and again, I'm here and I'm able to say that I'm very happy that we negotiated, but as I think we all understand, and believe me, whenever I turn on the TV, whenever I hear the word hostage, it's one of those things, Paul. It's a traumatic time in your life that if you have an accident, you get in the car, you think of that accident. Whenever you hear the word hostage, whenever you see a picture of a person on a tube, you know, blindfolded, you remember those days. So we should have never negotiated because we did, it opened the gates of hell where they have really fled that belief around the world to continue. So that's why, again, our belief in justice to, you know, convict Iran, because they have never been found convicted or ever been held accountable for what they did then and to all the other atrocities.
Did you know, you got there in October, this happened in November, so you were there just a few weeks.
Yes.
Did you know on November 3rd, on November 2nd, on November 1st, on October 31st, on the days leading up to this, did you know there's trouble coming?
Very much so. When I got my assignment and my girlfriend, which was my wife, she was in Quantico when I graduated from Marine Security Guard School. We knew at that time that Iran was just a very shady place to be. You know, there had been 20,000 people, and of course people are leaving and you're coming. You know there's something wrong there. But yeah, November 3rd of 1979, Paul, there were over 200,000 Iranians that demonstrated in front of the American embassy because they had known that the Shah had made it into the U.S. And the government of Iran was there that day to provide protection. Marine Security Guard is nothing more than to protect from small terrorist acts, to protect documents, property, and personnel. Well, they're not there to be able to hold off hundreds of thousands of people.
Yeah.
So the host government was there. November 4th of 1979, I'm walking into the motor pool gate to get a vehicle to go out into town. And I'll never forget, as I opened the door, I could hear the demonstration out in front. And again, demonstrations were every day demonstrating, you know, death to America. And as I walked into the motor pool gate, I'll never forget watching the drivers that were all sitting there drinking their hot tea and smoking, and all of a sudden my walkie-talkie had recall, which means report back immediately. As I turned and I looked at the front gate, which was right in front of me, the two Iranian guards that were at that post that were supposed to defend and protect us, like, at the same time, turned around and walked right back in their hut. Like, they didn't see the individuals climbing over the wall. And from that day on, that was a guarantee that, you know, it was a setup, that they knew it was going to happen on that day. So I made it back into the embassy and obviously got my gear on.
You talked before about some of the treatment from the guards bringing you mail, and you also mentioned that they made you play Russian roulette.
Well, there were times, and again, I don't know what the hostages that have recently been held years past. You know, when we were taken, there would be many a nights that they would come in and scream at us, and you will never go home unless the Shah comes back.
Did they speak English, Rocky?
Oh, yeah. A lot of them spoke English. A lot of them were educated right here in the United States, Paul.
Mm.
So,
how ironic is that?
Yeah, isn't it, though? So we're tied to the chair, and you know, the Shah will never come back. We will never negotiate. Well, then you will never go home. So that would go on for days at end, and eventually they would take us untie us and take us into a room and sit us down on the couch in front of a TV, and then all of a sudden two individuals would come in, one in a wheelchair, another, you know, missing an arm or whatever, and they were political prisoners, again, that were supposedly tortured by the Shah's regime. And then they would pop tapes in and say, you know, this is the other atrocities. And they would show us pictures of individuals put into a courtyard of a room or of a area and stripped nude and a rifle to the back of their head and shot. Well, you know, they said, all right, we want you to write letters to your government about this, you know, this man, and he must come home. We're not writing any letters. So they take us back to the room. Well, it was a couple weeks later that they came in. We had made our own little cards, and we were playing Uno one late night, about 2 o'clock in the morning, and all of a sudden a door burst open. And like I mentioned earlier, The only time you ever left that room was when you needed to go to the restroom. You knock on a door, put a piece of paper on the door, and that would alert the guard that you were knocking. Well, that specific morning, the door burst open. Three individuals come running in, masked with rifles, just like what you see in the pictures you see to this day.
Yep.
And they said, come with us. And we didn't move, because that was one thing that you try to not show that you were scared, because if you didn't show that you were scared, it really kind of teed them off. So you just took your time, and obviously we weren't moving fast enough, and they grabbed us by the hair and threw us out in the hallway. So now, again, as a hostage, once you leave an area that you weren't ever supposed to leave unless you're blindfolded, you know, something's wrong. Something's really bad. So as we're thrown out in the hallway, you look down the hall and you could see some of your other fellow colleagues that you hadn't seen since November 4th all lined up against the wall with rifles to the back of their head.
Mm.
And you're sitting there thinking, oh, boy, this is it. So you get down there, and sure enough, you're thrown against the wall and your hands are up. And I mean, it was like a water faucet was coming through your hand, because it was just sweating as it left the wall with a streak running down. And about that time, you're praying. I had never prayed so much in my life. My mother and father, God love them, they had always said, someday you're going to hope for God to be there. Well, they were right, that 444 days. Well, that specific night, I was really doing some serious praying. And about that time, they grabbed me, took me from that area, and threw me into a room and told me to undress. And right away, your mind goes back now to that previous week where they had shown you these movies. And sure enough, I get all the way down completely naked and turn around. And so at this time, you can just hear the lock and load. And it's like, you know, you think back to this movie that they had shown you of, you know, these political prisoners. And, you know, you're thinking that your head's going to be blown off right there.
Mm.
And all of a sudden, they said, all right, close back on. So, I mean, it was a continuous 444 days of psychological torture that they loved to do. Just making sure that they knew who was in charge.
I can't imagine what life is like when you wake up in the morning. You're happy to have another day, but you're not sure if that's the day you'll die, the day you'll be rescued, the day you don't know what the day is going to hold, but you know that the chances of it being a good day are very, very slim.
You're absolutely right. I mean, maintaining a positive attitude, Paul, that was the most difficult, challenging thing. And that's why, you know, after having a chance now of being, you know, freed, you know, it's not, as I tell my children, there's not a day that you should be able to go by that, you know, something's going to confront you that you can't handle. Because, you know, if you can handle that, you can handle anything. Again, I also have the man upstairs always reminding me, and I tell this story about one day how I was having a bad day, and I have this, you know, just I'm normal like everybody else, and I pull up to a restaurant, and I order my food, and I go up and pay for it, and I'm sitting there beating on the steering wheel, can't believe that this happened, and I look at how much I owe, and it's $4.44.
Mm.
And it's like, you know what? God, you're right. Life will never be as bad as what 444 days in Iran being held hostage was.
I heard a great story about one of your fellow hostages, Chuck Scott, who was at an airport once, and the flight was delayed, and some of the other passengers were grumbling, and he said, you know, I once waited for a plane for 444 days. 44 minutes is not going to bother me here today. Let's all relax.
Absolutely.
I know you didn't get any money from your lawsuit that you and the other hostages filed because, right, as we talked before, the government got in your way. Did the United States Marines pay you for the 444 days?
We had the Marine Corps held our pay while we were there. So, yeah, you definitely had a paycheck when you came back, which was wonderful. But, you know, not only the pay from the Marine Corps, Paul, I did not know this until afterwards, and that's why I'll be always indebted to the Marine Corps and the rest of the troops. Each month, my parents would meet with President Carter, and each month that took place, there was always a Marine at my parents' house to pick them up, take them to the airport, put them on the airplane, and then another Marine was in Washington, D.C. to pick them up and take them to wherever they needed. The Marine Corps, out of all the branches of the service, I was in told, I was informed, took care of our families. I mean, and it's a small elite group, but such a wonderful organization. And I always said when I left the Marine Corps, how am I ever going to find a company that's going to have as much, you know, quality, tradition, and pride as they did? And
you got one now.
You're absolutely right, Anheuser-Busch.
Yeah. Before we go here, I know you've got to run off to a meeting there at AB in a couple of minutes here. Can you tell me about your last day as a hostage?
Oh, my gosh. Well, my last day, again, this is 444 days that you're hoping comes to an end. And they came into our room and told us that we were going to be going home. And, you know, each time they moved us, we were always tied and blindfolded. And they moved us in the middle of the night. And that specific time, they came in and said, you're going to be leaving in 10 minutes. Get your stuff together. So, I mean, after 444 days of everything that they did, they just said, hey, it's time to go home. So we didn't believe them.
They thought this was more psychological torture.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we sat there, and they came back 10 minutes later, and they said, okay, you're not ready. Give you 10 more minutes. If you're not, you guys will remain. So we sat there and kind of thought, you know, this is the first time they ever came back, you know, so quickly like this, so maybe we better do it. So sure enough, we put our stuff on, you know, all of our little things that we had. It wasn't like I had a 10-piece luggage, you know, bag sitting by the door. It was just a sack, and I had kept my diary, and I had Bill and Jerry said, Rocky, whatever you do, don't put your diary in that bag. If we are going to go home, they're going to, you know, take our bags and everything else. So I had camouflage utilities on. They had the pockets, and my left cheek was hanging out the back, of course, after sitting on my rear end for so long. And I had put my diary around my right thigh in a plastic bag. And to this day, that diary is still in the same plastic bag at the Anheuser-Busch Credit Union in the safe deposit box. But tied it up and put my pants on. We walked to the door, and sure enough, they came about that time and blindfolded us. And you're thinking, okay, you're going home, and they're blindfolding us as we go home. Mm. It doesn't make sense. But again, you know, it's probably one of those things that, you know, they just want to, you know, move us to another location. Well, they had always moved us to a location where they would drive in, and you could always hear a garage door opening, and then they would drive in, close the garage door, and then, of course, we'd get out. Well, this specific night, I walked out, and I'd walked out with my sandals, and I touched the ground. And as I touched the ground, there was something that my toes were running through that I hadn't felt for 2 years, and it was snow.
Mm.
And I just ran that snow through my toes, which just felt so wonderful. And you could just feel the snow hitting you in the face at that time, and as you walked, you could hear the crunching of the snow as you walked to the vehicle. I mean, it was as quiet could be. And you get into the vehicle as they take you and they put you down, and all of a sudden, you know, the vehicle starts off. Two guys were up on top of the vehicle that we were in, and there was a vehicle in front. You could hear the door slam, and you could hear the door slam in the vehicle in the back. And as we drove off, the vehicle was scraping the side of the bushes, which obviously knew that, you know, that wasn't a normal spot, and jumps a curb, takes a right-hand turn, and we head down the road. And as we're heading down the road, all of a sudden you hear a siren, and you see through your blindfold this light. And all of a sudden, you know, our convoy pulls over to the side of the road, and you're thinking, all right, we're going home, and we're being pulled over by the police department. What the heck is going on here? So all of a sudden, they all jump off the vehicle on top, and the car's in the front and the back. You hear the doors close, and they run over to the car. Shalom, manakumana, shahube, you know, hello, how are you? And all of a sudden, you don't hear anything. And you hear someone get into the vehicle, and you hear the door open, the door close. You hear the individual pull the vehicle over to the side. The lights go off. All of a sudden, you hear the vehicle door open, close, and the vehicle is now off, and you hear them running across the road. Everybody jumps on top of the vehicle, into the vehicles, and we start driving off. And you're thinking, that's crazy. And all of a sudden, you drive, and for it seemed like eternity, we'd make a right-hand turn, and you hear a sound of a jet engine. And the engine, you know, your heart's just pounding, and you get into the airplane, people that you hadn't seen for 444 days, no one's high-fiving, everyone just sits down and looks around like, in shock, like, you know, is this really going to happen? We get to the end of the runway. The pilot, Algerian, broken English, you know, please be seated, we must leave. And, you know, the plane comes to a rocking motion where the only thing he's got to do is let go of the brake, and we're taxiing, and all of a sudden he gets to the high speed, and all of a sudden the plane comes back down to an idle. And sure enough, here again, they're messing with us, and they turn the runway lights off. And they held us for 20 minutes so that President Carter would not get the credit, but President Reagan would. So again, to summarize that, the terrorists are not Republican and they're not Democratic. They are out to humiliate the American government, as they told us back in 1979, and they're still doing it to this day. And that's why, again, this case that we could have had to show a country that harbors terrorism that you cannot ever do this ever again. And if you do, this is what will happen. So it's something that hopefully, the war on terrorism, I truly believe, is 25 years too late, Paul. And again, I'm happy to be here to be able to talk to you, but I truly believe that what would have happened had we fired upon them, and maybe they would have stepped back.
Rocky, I couldn't agree with you more, and I think we did not learn. I started this hour by asking you, did we miss a lesson 25 years ago in Tehran, Iran? And I firmly agree with you that we absolutely did, and I thank you very much. I know it can't be easy for you to go back mentally and talk about these things, although I'm sure in these 25 years you've gone back there in your mind far too many times. So I really appreciate you taking the time to do it here with me today.
Well, I appreciate it. And let's not forget our troops over there, just like what everybody did, the yellow ribbons. I mean, it brought us home. So we can't forget that. So God bless America and our freedom.
Thank you, Rocky. I appreciate it.
All right, sir.
Rocky Sickman, who 25 years ago was one of those 52 American hostages held for 444 days in Tehran, Iran. What a story.